Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, of the making of books, there is no end. How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
On May 25th, I was able to interview Papa Esadu, who plays the character Hamlet, and Natalie Simpson, who plays the character Ophelia, in the currently running Royal Shakespeare Company production of Hamlet. I know that you will enjoy this inspiring program.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. I have a really special program to bring to you today. I'm sitting in the offices of the Royal Shakespeare Company here in Stratford-upon-Avon. And of course, hopefully you listeners know this is the birthplace of William Shakespeare. It's also the 400th anniversary year of his death. And last night, I want to be able to tell you that I was able to attend the RSC performance of Shakespeare's Hamlet, and two actors from the performance have graciously agreed to be here. They're taking time out of their busy rehearsal schedule. They have another performance tonight, and I'll just tell you now, I'm going back tonight. So anyway, they are here to talk to us about Hamlet. With me today is Papa Esadu. He has the title role of Hamlet. And I also have with me Miss Hamlet. That's being 64 and jet lagged. But I have Natalie Simpson with me, and she has a title role of Ophelia. So welcome to Thank Just you. The Best Literature. Melanie Phillips had a great article in the Times, May 10th of is it still May? It is still May, yes. And she gave really high praise to the Royal Shakespeare Company because, first of all, the Royal Shakespeare Company has a high value on education and educating people about Shakespeare. Here's one of the quotes that she said, and I don't want to get into, you know, any politics here, but she does say about Shakespeare, she says, "Shakespeare doesn't need cuts or additions or transgendered trapeze artists gyrating in hot pants to David Bowie." Ooh. In Shakespeare's plays, the words are everything. And I have to agree with Ms. Phillips, and that's what I really try very hard to work with and with my students is to teach them that's everything. I mean, it's the poetry. Mm-hmm. It's the poetry that you want. And of course, I just want to tell you last night that, you know, I've kind of hooked on the Branagh film because we use it a lot. You know, I do make the students read in class. They have to read on their own. I mean, we're talking 19, 20-year-olds. I really try and stress with them, look, it's the poetry you want to get into. Mm-hmm. It's the understanding that Shakespeare is trying to communicate. And I have to say, I was really moved to tears last night with your performance, both of you. And it was the words. I mean, Papa, you were so clear, and the diction was so clear, and it was really easy to follow it. And, you know, some of the actors will go so fast, and I know there's got to be pressure on you guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, so the thing that I'd like to do is just, you know, let's talk about the poetry, and let's talk about how it's impacted you. I mean, doing Hamlet, that's got to be, like, the role that any Shakespearean actor would want. And you have it, yeah. And you're just you're commanding it. And of course, I did some research before I came over. But so they don't want to hear me; they want to hear how is doing Hamlet and all the poetry impacted your life?
Playing Hamlet is it kind of feels like being in the 12-round bout of Mike Tyson. 6 times a week, you know,
I can believe that.
You come out the other end and you feel kind of like you've been knocked from pillar to post, and it's difficult, and it requires a lot of kind of physical, vocal, mental, emotional, psychological preparation to be able to do it. You can't just jump into it. For example, we started off doing a 5-week run of this play, and then I fortunately had a month off whilst half the cast rehearsed another play, Cymbeline, and then I had to come back into it after being away from it for a month. And I was like, hey man, I've done it for 5 weeks, it's all in my body's in my mind. I walked on and there was nothing. Nothing. It was kind of like trying to walk on your hands. So yeah, it's really difficult, and it really requires huge preparation. But the language, as you quite pertinently pointed out, is the key to it. I mean, I think like Shakespeare is a genius when it comes to linguistic skill, but I think Hamlet is kind of like his piece de resistance in that sense.
I really, you know, when I look at Hamlet, of course, I was a lit major all the way back in the 70s, so I remember sitting in lit class, and of course we had to pass a 4-credit Shakespeare class before they'd give us our degree, you know, so it was not easy. But I remember sitting in class going through these plays saying, what are they talking about? You know, of course, now that I've had some life experience and all that, I understand it better. But what's it like doing the soliloquies? I mean, they're so instructive. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think about it, or do you think about it before you get up there? I mean, you have to understand it to be able to portray what you portrayed last night.
Fully. Like, I try not to think about it before I do it, because that takes away from the immediacy of the connection to the language what you're saying, and their connection with the audience. Because, I mean, like, soliloquies are essentially just conversations with audience members.
Oh, it's...
That's what I feel.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Like, if there's a question in the soliloquy, you're asking it without knowing that there's going to be an answer. So I could ask, am I a coward, for example? And I'd hope that someone would tell me either I am or I'm not. But if not, then that pushes me on to the next question. Who calls me villain? So, I mean, like, I think that kind of helps it. But, I mean, these soliloquies are just mad because they're so well known in terms of English literature or English language literature. It's kind of like the kind of greatest hits.
But, you know, it's something, I don't know if you'd agree with me. You've done certainly a lot more. But don't you feel sometimes that Shakespeare is actually Hamlet, that he's writing for himself?
I don't know.
That's what I do to my students. This is what I do to them.
I remember someone wrote that Hamlet is a play written by a genius about a genius. So if that's, I mean, it's obviously a very personal play because his son was called Hamlet. His son that
died
was called Hamlet. And this is a play about a son avenging a father's death. So there's a kind of like mirror image kind of thing in there.
So the thing is, one of my favorites, it's not really necessarily a soliloquy, but when he's talking with Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, you know, after they, you know, of course, Claudius is trying to cover his neck and, you know, brings them there because he wants to find out what's really going on in Hamlet's mind. It's all a big ruse. But then he goes in, he breaks into what a piece of work is man, you know, how low. So he, it's like, can you imagine Shakespeare writing this? It's like, I kind of imagine this is what he's wondering. You know, here we are. Here we have human beings. You know, and he brings us out in other soliloquies. We have this great discourse. We have these minds. We can reason. And yet we can get into such terrible messes sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's like, here's Hamlet. He was a brilliant. I mean, according to the story, of course, you know, it's based on history anyway, but here he's at Wittenberg, he was studying philosophy. He was a very, very well-educated man, probably more ready to take over the throne than certainly Claudius was. And he certainly knew Claudius was a ditz compared to his own dad. So it's. I mean, it took a lot of genius to put so much detail in the story. And then let's just transfer to Natty a little bit, because you get enough on stage. So how do you feel playing Ophelia? I mean, it's probably one of the most dramatic female roles that you could play.
I think playing Ophelia has had more of an emotional effect on me than I maybe anticipated. When I first started doing some research into the character, Simon and I decided to get some women from this charity called Mind, and they basically support women with manic depression, bipolar, psychoses. And we spoke to them about what we thought Ophelia was going through, actually, not just madness, but something that's tangible. And we looked at kind of her symptoms, what she was saying, what she was doing, how she was acting. And we decided upon We decided on manic depression with some episodes of like psychoses, like she's having a bit of a psychotic break. And I think through talking, I mean, I spoke to him for hours and kept in touch with him by email afterwards, and I did a lot of research myself online, watched a few documentaries. And that, I think, coupled with having kind of experiences with people in my life that have mental issues, I think it really opened something in me, especially to have to go into a place where I do at the end in that madness scene. It's kind of recognizing some things in yourself where you're like, wow, I think everyone has, under extreme stress, everyone has the capacity to break a little bit. Everyone does. And I think that's what kind of shook me a little bit.
I thought you did a great job. I mean, the one thing is, like I said, I felt like you were real. I mean, it was like I said, you see a film, they're kind of flat. I mean, even I don't care how much color you have, I don't care how much, you know. But when you're actually in the theater, and we're really pretty close. I mean, we're really pretty, even though we might be sitting in the upper level, we're still pretty close to you. And you really were able to communicate the feeling of this poor girl. You do feel for her. And even like with the queen, she doesn't want to see her. And I'm thinking, well, why don't you want to see her? She needs help. So I thought you did a great job of that. And but it really showed the stages. Both of you showed the stages of what these characters go through. You know, Hamlet, he thinks calls himself a lily-livered pigeon. And he's grappling with this. You know, he's grappling with, is the ghost, is he a demon, you know, or is this really a spirit that could help me? You know, he doesn't come to those conclusions right away, but we find him transferring. And then here you see this Ophelia in love with her father, you know, in love with Hamlet. Obviously there, you know, she's ready to just begin her life. And then this tragedy happened, her father's killed, you know, the love of her life tells her, I never did love you, which is a lie. And what really got to me the most is here, you know, Laertes is putting the facsimile of you in the grave. And then Hamlet finally admits, I loved her, and yet you never heard it.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was just a great, great, I don't know, it really communicated it to me. And I thought, have you ever thought about, have you learned anything from Ophelia that you could transfer to maybe people that you know have depression? Have you learned something? I mean, it's really...
Yeah, I would say it's interesting to note that when people... Because with Ophelia, what I realize is that she cracks because she feels immense guilt. She feels that because she listened to her dad and she decided to end things with him, Hamlet went crazy. He then turned on her, became violent with her, abusive. You know, they became abusive. He then goes and kills her father. So she thinks, okay, so my father's death is on me. His treatment is on me. So I think it's interesting to note, to think, or to realize that sometimes when you get to this state where you're so broken, it's all about blaming things on yourself. And sometimes it's good to get an understanding of the whole picture and to not sit there and blame yourself and take everything on yourself, because that's when you kind of implode.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I just thought it was a great portrayal, and you know, she's a great character. And the other thing I just want to tell you is, I mean, I was not a bit put off by the upgrade and the currentness of it, and I love the African influence with the drums. And the drums are very dramatic and
they're very guttural.
Yeah, it is. And but you know, isn't that like here's what she says later. Let me just read this quickly. She's talking about, it says, Shakespeare's plays connect British children to their national identity. I think it connects us all to our inner selves, you know. Says they also teach them everything they need to know about human nature and relationships, about love and death and ambition and conscience and betrayal. That's Hamlet. And Lear. We just finished Lear. We just had our semester right before I came. And, you know, it's a family tragedy, isn't it? And Hamlet is really a family tragedy. I mean, it's like, I thought it was really good. It was really clear it's the players that bring it out, where it's like, this is a mirror, you know, and it's like everyone can identify. this world loves this play.
Yeah, because I don't think there's anything exclusively British about Shakespeare. Yeah. And obviously, like, William Shakespeare is an English institution and a really kind of, like, important figure in English history. But, like you say, there's something so universal about the themes and stories explored in these plays. You could go to any country in the world. You could go to China. You could go to the middle of the Amazon. You could go to Africa. And they would... And if you read them, a Shakespearean play, in their language, they would swear to you it was written by an agent.
Yeah, some of my colleagues said... I was telling them, I said, I'm going. I said, look, I'm going to go to the RSC. Of course, we were at Hampton Court. Mm-hmm. I tried to get in the Globe, and we have to work some things out with that. Yet. Probably I'll have to Skype interviews with them. You know, they're really sensitive right now. I'm sure this article didn't really help them. You know, what are you going to do when you get here? But the thing is I really believe, like, Hamlet is every man. And to me, it's really appropriate. Mm-hmm. And I was telling everybody, I said, it's going to be new. It's going to be a little bit upgraded. I said, but it's nearly an all-black cast. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's just appropriate. You know, it could be an all-Asian cast. It could be, because it's like Hamlet is like every man. He's asking these same questions. What is man? What is man's purpose?
What is man? What is woman?
And what is a woman? I have that in here, by the way. I just didn't say it. But I gave that to Amy. But what is a woman? And, you know, are we just the highest form of animals? Is there something on the other side? You know, is there another life? Why do we have all these great talents and abilities, like the brain power that you have?
Yeah.
To remember all this. I mean, it's amazing. And to portray it and to communicate it. So there is something very special, and I think Shakespeare knew that, but I don't think he necessarily had the answer either. And I think he was driving for it. So, but, you know, the thing is, there are a lot of people like that, maybe I better get back to this, where the colleague said, oh, I don't think I want to see that. And I want to see it just traditional. I want to see a blonde Dane, you know. And I said, well, you can just watch the Branagh film, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you get that. I mean, Kenneth Branagh did a great job of portraying that. But I just think it's appropriate to do it the way it's done. You know, it's not everyone is going to like it. Yeah. But if the words are there, that's what it was really impressed me.
But that's why this is so important, because so many people will come and see this. And hopefully it will change opinions.
I think our responsibilities as artists, as actors, as writers, directors, theatre makers, our responsibilities are, like, if you go back to the most kind of, like, traditional form of storyteller, it's about getting stories and teaching people and allowing people and penetrating people and communicating themes that are difficult to verbalise or difficult to explore in everyday conversation through the beautiful power, magnetic power, magnificent power of theatre. And... obviously, there's huge virtue in the traditions of theatre and the traditions, because they are brilliant. That's why they're traditions. But also, like, in today's day and age, we've got a responsibility to make these stories as accessible as possible for as large a group of people as possible.
I know the younger people will like the influence, but I do think... I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with seeing the traditional.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that has its place.
Yeah. Exactly, I'm saying that.
The thing is, I like the traditional. I like to see the traditional maybe first. But I also teach our students that they need to be reading the plays, not just looking. You are getting interpretation. I mean, Branagh put his interpretations into things. I'm sure your producer is putting some interpretations in. And I think Shakespeare allowed for all that. But the thing is... What excites me is that Hamlet, even Lear, I mean, if you look at Cordelia, if you look at Regan, if you look at, you know, the other sister,
Goneril.
I mean, those things are being portrayed today. I mean, those are happening in life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's evil things like that going on. And I think, how are we going to deal with it? How are we going to resolve it all? And I know a lot of people think, one person said to me, I told the listening audience, we're going to, you know, read Hamlet. And I get all this reaction back. Oh, I'm not reading Hamlet. I said, I want to watch violence like that. I'll watch it on television. And I'm saying, you're missing the whole point. You know, so they said, well, it's just so depressing at the end. But I feel like Shakespeare put something in that they don't think about much, and that's the character Horatio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the end, he wants to commit. He sees all this death, and all this, he just can't handle it. Even Fortinbras is just totally affected by it.
Mm.
You know, like, wow, I won the kingdom, not by military might. I won it by the problems on this family. But I think Horatio is the positive side, because, you know, they're at the scene, you're at the scene at the end, and you know, Horatio is holding you and you're dying, and but he wants to drink. He wants to end it. He's, I can't deal with this. And yet it's Hamlet that says, no, you got to have to stay and tell my story. And so that's what I think Shakespeare wanted. He wants this story told because there's education in it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I don't want to do all the talking. What do you think? Okay. Am I crazy? Am I on target?
Well, not at all. Like, because it's a tragedy, so obviously there's to be a death at the end. But this is kind of like a typical revenge's tragedy in the fact that there's like four deaths in quicks in like ten seconds or something. It's mad. It's kind of like Mad Max. It's just like an absolute massacre.
It's the Mad Max of the 1600s.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that should be our tagline, I think.
Yeah.
But
maybe I'll use that as my title.
Yeah.
Mad Max of the 1600s.
But I think it needs something almost that ridiculous and that epic to tease out the really, really vital and resonant themes within this play.
Right.
So to grab the attention, say this does happen, you need something that big. And for there to be then the kind of flip reverse side of that, of Horatio being like, okay, just like when Fortinbras comes, he says, yes, there's time for that, but I need you to listen to this story before men's minds are wild.
Right.
The importance of that is crucial.
Yeah, there's so many dramatic lines. Even Ophelia, I just wrote it down. I had to how many times I've read this play, she has this quote. Let me just pull it up here quick. I brought my little book along with me so that, you know, I have my old one from. But here's what, this is such a dramatic line, and I think it really sums up a lot. This is when, before her one of her songs there on tomorrow, St. Valentine's Day, she's with the king, and she says, well, good deal to you. They say the owl was a baker's daughter. Lord, we know what we are, but we know not what we may be.
Yeah.
He sandwiches that in between, but that's a moment of sanity.
Mm-hmm.
That's not insanity.
Well, that's it, exactly. That whole scene is, in my interpretation, she's completely sane. She knows exactly what she's saying.
Absolutely.
No one else can understand what she's trying to communicate. And she's so smart, because she pulls on everything. She pulls on like old fables and like old wives' tales and songs, and she has all of this information in her head. And it's just an overload of information. It's an overload of feeling. And she's trying to communicate, and she's trying to get it across, and her mind is going too fast. And no one understands her. No one wants to understand her. And she's just forgotten. Even at the end, when Hamlet and Laertes, they speak, and Laertes says, oh, well, my father's death is not on you, and neither is mine. And they talk about themselves, and she's forgotten. No one mentions her. No one remembers her. And, I thought it was... I think it's interesting just to note that.
But but the thing is, I wanted to just tell you, Natalie, it came across so clear.
Mm.
You know, as of course, I feel like I've had, just having to reread them and teach them and work with them and work with students.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm really mean. For their final paper, I make them write a soliloquy in iambic pentameter on some problem that they're dealing with in their life. You know, and they get so mad, and they want to date. I can't believe you're making us do this. And then
strike.
I'm telling you, every one of them comes to me afterwards, and they say, thanks. We're really glad you made us do that.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. because you can get those things out through poetry as well.
Yeah,
I
do.
Yes, I just want to put one more quote.
Mm.
Even if we have a few minutes here, I'm going to steal it. I'm enjoying this. I hope you guys are.
Mm.
I know
great.
It's just, okay. But this is page 140. This is where I think was very poignant for me, but also I'm sure, you know, you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. This is right at the end with Horatio and towards the end with Horatio and Hamlet. And this is, let's see, it's Act 5, Scene 2. He says, not a whit, we defy augury. There is a special providence in the fall of a sparrow. If it be now, it is not to come. If it be not to come, it will it will be now. If not to be now, yet it will come. Yeah. The readiness is all, since no man of aught leaves knows, was it to leave betimes, let be. See, I feel like he comes to resolution there.
Right, yeah.
And just says, look, what's going to be is going to be. And I feel like he ends peacefully, even though he dies tragically. He's the one that actually comes to conclusions, but look, Gertrude doesn't.
Yeah.
Claudius, he can't even repent. He knows he's evil.
Yeah.
And then he says, look, I can't, you know, he's telling himself to bend his knees. He can't repent. I think Hamlet struggles with having to fulfill his father's revenge request. But he comes to peace with it all and say, okay, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? So there's a lot in that for people too. I believe that there are certain tragedies in our lives we have to accept. There's certain problems.
Yeah.
But it does work out. And I think that's why Horatio stays behind to keep telling the story. That look, you don't have to have a messy life. Or you can deal with it and still come out on the other side. Mm-hmm. So
I completely agree. I think for me, my journey, like Hamlet's super objective throughout the play is a quest for freedom and rest and release. And it requires enormous bravery and courage to be able to leave yourself at the kind of mercy of the world. Do you know what I mean? The mercy of what may happen or what may not happen. But there is a real virtue and there's a real nobility in that bravery and in that courage and being able to do that. And so I think by the end, when he says the rest is silence, there is a kind of resolution in that rest and that silence.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. So anyway, I thought that it was just really great. And it's just really appreciate you coming in to talking to us today.
It's been such a pleasure.
We don't want to, you know, hold you up. But I do want to say to all the listeners out there that, you know, Hamlet is running through August 13th.
Mm, and actually, it's going to be screened in cinemas in the U.S. as well.
Dean just told me that, so we're going to get all that information for you because you'll be able to see it. You'll be able to see it.
I think it's United.
But here's the thing. If you have some extra cash and you don't know what to do with your summer, please come to Stratford.
Okay.
And see this wonderful production. So thank you for coming in today.
Absolute pleasure.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
We know you have a lot to do tonight, and I'll be there. I clapped at every soliloquy. I'm sorry. No one would. Come on. That was me.
That was you.
I said, come on, people. This is awesome.
That's
clap at that. Does that bother you?
I'll pay you to come every night.
Does that bother you? Does that bother the actors? I'm saying,
what
are you sitting there for? You should be jumping up and down and you just hear the most incredible poetry in the universe.
You're listening to Just the Best Literature with Dennis Leap on 101.3 KPCG.
You can attend the play Hamlet live through August 13th at the Royal Shakespeare Company Theatre in Stratford-upon-Avon in the beautiful Midlands of England. And you can see the same production in select theatres in the USA on Wednesday, July 13th. Check the RSC website for locations and times. Please email me any comments on this program to jbl@pcog.org. You can also follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.